Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi there, welcome to the latest edition of Inside China Tech Podcast. My name is Kong Ho, I'm the technology editor of the South China Morning Post. Our regular host, Zhen Su, is away on a business trip in Paris, so I'm sending in for her this week. This week, we will talk about facial recognition and the surveillance industry in China. And I'm very happy to have our reporter in Beijing, Sarah Dai, joining us to talk about some of her on-the-ground reporting. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Dai. I'm the tech reporter based in Beijing with South China Morning Post. And basically, I cover artificial intelligence and Baidu mobility and autonomous driving from Beijing. So again, happy to be here.
So Sarah, I mean, facial recognition has become, you know, part of everyday life for many people across the world. I guess if you own a higher-end smartphone, the chances are there is facial recognition baked into the device. You know, you use it to unlock your phone and maybe even to authenticate mobile payments. What's it like in China? Maybe you can just introduce to our listeners how prevalent facial recognition is in China in everyday life.
Yeah, like for those not so familiar with life going on here, I would say like facial recognition is really everywhere nowadays going on in China and becoming like a irreplaceable part of the daily life. Like for example, if you go to take a train or flight, the chances are there must be some facial recognition software or camera there, so helping you to get on to the train or airport for the security check. Like before, like the security staff would have to hold your identification card to the eye level and check your faces with the ID card. But now they barely look up because the cameras with facial recognition would do that for them. And like if you go to Shanghai and Shenzhen subway station, you can also scan your face to enter the station. So that will do the automatic faring accounting for you. And also, like if you're going to hail a ride, for those major platforms like Didi, they all require drivers to have the ID, facial ID check every day before they start their services, just to ensure the vehicles and the drivers are properly registered. Like in it's also in at school and hospitals. Like for school, they have nowadays some universities have this facial recognition software for to check class attendance and also to check the identification for exam takers.
That's not really good for those who want to skip classes, right? I mean, it used to be you could hide in, you know, maybe 100 students or undergrads in a lecture hall and hope to get away with it. But, you know, it seems like, you know, with this software now, you'll be caught up for not attending class.
Yes, that will be a nightmare I can only imagine for students nowadays. There's no way you can ask your pal to just help you cover up.
Did you do that, or are you one of those good students who always attend lectures and sit in the front row?
Yeah, I was the one helping out to my classmates.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because you know, I remember when we were in Shenzhen a couple of months back. I think with some of our other colleagues visiting Tencent's new headquarters, and you know, the access control is also monitored by facial recognition. You basically have to scan your face to enter the building, and you know, the permission for the areas that you are allowed to go to is all in the system. So there's no way that you can really go anywhere, you know, without you know, without the building knowing. And you can't, you know, even, I guess you can't even ask like a human security personnel to let you in, just because it's all controlled by software. And another funny thing is, I was just in Guizhou last week, and I was at this really famous waterfall in Guizhou. And you would think that Guizhou is pretty remote, hence its beautiful scenery and all that. But you know, the entrance to the tourist area is just manned by facial recognition. You have to buy your tickets with ID, and then the ID is then correlated to your face. And then after that, you can forget about the ticket, because you just be scanned and be allowed in and out of the area. So it is really prevalent, not just in, I think, some of the major cities, but even in, you know, all across the country.
That should be the plan, like for, like to catch, catch or avoid ticket scalpers everywhere in China who can take advantage from that. And for also for amusement park, like to save you from queuing for a long time, so they can get you personal appointments for each facility with your face ID.
You know, that said, you know, we've seen, you know, headlines coming out of the US about how San Francisco has become the first city in America to ban the use of facial recognition by the police and I think by the law enforcement agencies. I think there's concern there that the technology could be misused, or that there is no oversight. And I believe that Oakland, just across the bay, as well as Somerville and Massachusetts, is also they're also considering similar restrictions. Is there a similar concern in China about privacy and how intrusive you know, facial recognition together with surveillance cameras?
I would say Chinese users in general are more like they would say pragmatic in this stance. Like they opt for efficiency more to privacy. So also the consensus in China among the industries or general public, that's like the trend is sort of inevitable. So so like they would right now, like the Chinese government is working on like devising the better guideline, like for how good how to decide like how good the facial recognition technologies is, hence like how what scenario it can be used, and how also regulate on the data security parts instead of like going straight with outright ban.
I know you recently interviewed the founders of SenseTime, which is the world's largest, most valuable AI startup, and they are doing some pioneering work in facial recognition as well. And I think you also spoke with the people at MacV, also known as Phase++. What do they say about this debate over privacy versus, you know, some of the benefits that such technology could have?
Yes, you're right. These people are really techno optimists, I would say. They think that first of all, technology is a tool. So instead of being good and evil, people behind it should take the responsibilities and should work out better regulations instead of blaming the technology itself. In my conversation with the SenseTime CEO, he believes like the San Francisco case will be just an exception, a standalone case. But like in general, like they all think if people start to see like the how good, how convenient technologies can make their daily life, they will embrace it, just like embracing the smartphone. Like you still have the choice of not using smartphone, but that's the consequences in convenience you have to bear on. And also like for different phases of technology, there will always be discussions with data security and privacy, just like the telecom. Like before the introduction of smartphone or mobile phone, you will say like, what if someone can tap on my conversation, like or see the data being transmitted by my phone. But when it comes with the telecom and the disruption of the smartphones, like people start to stop worrying about having a third party or the data leak because of the better regulation.
You went down to Hangzhou, I think last month, to do some underground reporting, and you chose to go to this relatively new district in Hangzhou called Binjiang. What's in Binjiang? Yes. Why were you there?
Binjiang district is really interesting in the sense that it's home to the China's top three surveillance camera makers. And we really decided to take a look into how those companies grow from copycats to the world's giants and the country's top three giants. And since the U.S. banned the federal agencies from buying Hikvision and Dahua's camera in the 2019 U.S. National Defense Authorization Act, like people outside the circles would wonder like what these companies are, like how they grew all of a sudden. That brought us to the district to take a look. And there was also a security expo happening in Hangzhou at the very heart of the world's surveillance capital.
Can you tell us a little bit about Hikvision, Dahua, and I believe the third one is UniView. What are their respective kind of backgrounds?
Yes, UniView is relatively new, founded in 2006, and Hikvision had its beginning to a Chinese government research institute, the state-owned CETHIK, was its biggest shareholder with a 39% stake. And for Dahua, its founder Fu Liquan is a former defense industry technician turned entrepreneur.
So how much of a combined market share do they have of the global surveillance camera sales?
All of the three account for about 30% of global revenue. And the latest figure will be out in June for recap of the past year. So, they are still fast growing.
So tell me, Sarah, what are some of the reasons behind this company's growing to becoming global champions?
One of the privileges of the Security Expo is I got to talk staff and mid-level managers of the all three companies. And they basically would have to credit the strong, huge demands at home for the security, like the Skynet program and the Sharp Eye project, which is the national security network covering both urban and rural surveillance. And it's also and they also have to credit like for Dahua and Hikvision, all of the three have overseas markets, and for that part they credit the growing demands to counter terrorism worldwide.
So the domestic demand, you mentioned Skynet and Sharp Eyes, are they like two different programs? Maybe can you explain a little bit what it is?
Yes, the SharpEye is an extension to the what's original to be the Skynet National Security Network. And the plan is that they will leave no dark corner across the country, and it is meant to help counter fight crime and stop terrorism across the country. And like people that I've talked to all hailed like the low crime rates just because of the growing appearance of surveillance camera to deter crime. Yes, and China has installed a national guideline in as early as 2015 that the country aims to set up an omnipresent, fully networked and always working and fully controllable video surveillance system at all levels by 2020.
Now, we read a lot about And we have also reported on the surveillance in Xinjiang, in the far western region of China, especially over the Uyghur minority. In your conversations with these executives and managers and analysts, I mean, what is the view that's coming out of the surveillance industry about their role in this?
Yeah, like people in the industry really firmly believe that technology as a harmless tool, so it should that people behind it should take the responsibility of how it's used, and they also have been vocal to regulations to better put in rein the technologies and protect data securities, and for them, like it's not different. Despite Xinjiang has been a super sensitive issue here in China, like there's still many reports on state media or just briefings in the annual reports of Hikvision and DARPA on their involvement in this area for smart city, what DAPS as smart city projects. And like it's an all-round project to them, not only for to catch crimes, stop crimes, but also like to better run the traffic and detect fire or emergencies. And so it's an all-round, it has been portrayed as an all-round smart city control project instead of a simple surveillance.
Talking about smart cities, we also know that 5G, the ultra-fast telecom networks, is just around the corner. It's being trialed in some areas in China and you know across the world. How will this added speed transform not just facial recognition, but also surveillance in those areas that you just talked about?
Yes. The 5G will be a game changer in many sectors. Like for the security and the surveillance, like first it will change unlimited the computing power, because you have to contain certain edge computing capabilities at the end for the surveillance camera. The computing station have to be closed to reduce the transmission time, waste of time. But this 5G, like it will back stronger computing power for this surveillance camera network, and you can remotely control the coordinate those video surveillance network at a faster speed. And also, like it will unleash another potentials for the involvement of drones in terms of the smart city projects. But right now, the Hikvision and Dahua have been raised their solutions for smart city, like Dahua is heart of city, and Hikvision is AI cloud. Like they all mentioned the involvement of drones, like they can be used to help regulate to help handle the emergencies like a super traffic jam or some chaotic or organized crimes, and also stop fire. Like there has been mentioning of the deaths of firefighters recently in China, and the drones can help put out fire if it can be remotely controlled more efficiently.
Just want to bring you back to Binjiang. I mean, as you were kind of going around the district in the taxis, you know, was there anything special about the district? I mean, after all, it is the, you know, it is the surveillance capital of the world in the sense that three of the largest surveillance companies are headquartered there. Is there anything special about the district?
Yeah, I would recommend people who will go to, whenever they go to Hangzhou and stop by there just to have a look of the future. Because when I was there, I was super amazed by the sheer number of surveillance cameras in the districts. Like, they are doing all sorts of test points, labels, but there can be as many as 2,000 of surveillance cameras from one traffic pole. It's really, it's kind of frightening. But like, they are testing different models for all three companies. And you will see, it's kind of future, it's kind of, Hangzhou has been known as a tourist spot. So you simply go there as a tourist, you won't notice, you won't take notice of those number of surveillance camera. But in Binjiang, like, it's really quiet and home to all three headquarters of the company, headquarters to the all three companies. And when you hail a taxi, you will find like four surveillance camera in one taxi. That's kind of a quite unique experience.
So you actually record it when you take a taxi?
Yes.
What do the drivers say? I mean, isn't it a bit kind of, you know, being on camera all day? It's kind of strange.
Yeah, that's really strange experience. And I was new there, but they barely noticed the existence of camera or having been used to it by now. Because it happens after the G20 meeting, and Hangzhou has been treated as one of the safest city in the world. And they actually tear down the plastic shields for drivers just to show how safe Hangzhou is. And for drivers, they feel secured by the existence of the cameras, because they say, like, if you are not a bad guy, you shouldn't be afraid.
That's really funny, because when I was living in Shanghai, I think in a lot of the cities in China, for those who haven't been recently, they have this plastic kind of shields that wrap around the driver's seat. I think it's more to protect the protect the driver, because you know, they're afraid of being robbed, and you know, if they're really rude, and you know, many of the taxi drivers in China are pretty rude, you know, the passengers might try to attack them. So I think it's for their own protection. But I guess, you know, if you are on camera, you know, and with facial recognition, people, the authorities know exactly who you are, so it's not that good idea to strike the cabbie.
Yeah, that's kind of the rhetoric, that if you're not a bad guy, you shouldn't be afraid. So just another perspective from China.
So don't do bad things in China. That's the takeaway, I guess, with all the cameras around.
Yeah.
You know, on that note, I think, you know, we're going to wrap up this week's edition of Inside China Tech. Thank you very much for listening. And if you want to follow us, you can follow us on Twitter at @scmptech. That's @scmptech. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, and Himalaya. Talk to you next week, and I hope you tune in. Bye.
Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.